Welcome back to Coast AM. And we are going to be back with my guest, Steve Taylor, who talks about spiritual and, well, why science needs spirituality, and I guess vice versa as well. We will be right back. I'm Lisa Garr, and you're listening to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast AM. My guest is Steve Taylor. We're talking about his latest book called Spiritual Science. And Steve, I have a question for you about altruistic behavior. And you're in Manchester there in England, and there was that terrorist attack a while ago. Well, no, not maybe a year ago at the
Yeah,
Ariana Grande concert. Yes.
that's right. Yeah,
Were you there at the time?
I was in Manchester at the time. Yeah, just I live just about 3 miles away from the place where the bomb exploded.
Wow. And did you see these people really helping people?
Well, yeah, there were just some amazing cases of people helping each other. I have a neighbor who's a taxi driver, and I wasn't aware of the incident happened very late at night. I was asleep at the time, so I wasn't aware of it until the next morning. But my neighbor said that he, as soon as he heard about it, got into his taxi and drove to the center of Manchester to offer people free lifts home, people outside the concert who were, stranded in all the chaos. Yeah, and it was quite, it always happens. It's a very regular feature of crisis situations or emergency situations. That often, rather than running away as you'd expect, some people actually run towards the danger to offer to help other people.
That's
And that happened that night, yeah.
another sign of interconnectedness. It happened at 9/11. It happened many, many different times. Where else does this level of interconnectedness show up in history?
Well, I think it has shown up. It's probably more likely to have become evident in the last 2 or 3 centuries. I think if you go back to the 18th century and earlier, life was quite brutal for most people around the world. And there was a lot of cruelty, which was just part of everyday life. It was just accepted. Punishments of criminals were incredibly harsh. People's treatment of animals and children was incredibly harsh. But I think that, even though in some ways the world is obviously still quite a cruel and heartless place, I think in general human beings have become more interconnected and more empathic, even, more generous and kind over the last 200 or 300 years, And that's expressed itself in concepts such as democracy, equality, more lenient treatment of criminals, treatment of animals and treatment of children and so forth. There's been a very slow process of increasing compassion, I think.
Yes, if comparatively, yes, absolutely. But there's still a large amount of unconsciousness.
That's true, yeah. I think in some ways, over the past few years, it seems to have actually increased slightly. But I
Why do
think
you think
even
that
that,
is?
well, in some ways, in a kind of quite slightly convoluted way, that could be a positive sign. Because I think there is this wave of gradual awakening which is happening throughout the world. And it expresses itself in terms of an increasing interest in spirituality, an increasing movement beyond materialism, which I talk about in the book, and also an increasing connection to nature. I think more and more people are feeling connected to nature, and also an increased simplicity. I think more and more people are realizing that consumerism doesn't really bring happiness, and they're trying to make an effort to live in a more kind of holistic and a more simple way. So I think there's definitely this wave of awakening which is gathering momentum. And I think the old kind of patriarchal ego, the old kind of materialistic patriarchal ego, is feeling threatened by this rising wave of awakening. And whenever, people feel threatened, or whenever a kind of structure feels threatened, then it tries to strengthen itself in resistance. And I think that's maybe what is happening now, that the old values, which are in danger, they're trying to reassert themselves because they feel threatened.
I hope. I mean, is it just in our bubble that we feel that consciousness and interconnectedness and appreciation for nature, is more idealistic? Or do you really think that this is a more average? Or is it actually tipping the scales as being more mainstream?
Definitely, yeah. I mean, I think that the biggest trend over the last 20 or 30 years has been an increasing interest in spirituality. And there's even research showing that spiritual experiences seem to be becoming more common, that they are more common now than they were 50 years ago. So more and more people are feeling a sense of oneness with the universe and a kind of spiritual sense of elevation. Those experiences seem to be becoming more common.
We actually have
And,
a, sorry for interrupting. We have a
sorry.
caller on the line here that has some experiences they want to share with you as well, or along those lines. And then we'll go back to what you were talking about here. Keith from Maine, from Ceylon, Maine. Is that how you pronounce that?
Solon.
Solon, thank you very much.
Yes, I had a I've had three different occasions where I've had a telepathic communication, both outgoing and incoming. One incoming, two outgoing, well, multiple outgoing, but yeah, I've done that.
Can you share with us your experience?
Well, I was went through a divorce and I was venting my frustrations. My wife was away at the time, working. She comes home that afternoon and she tells me about such and such a time. I don't want to be too specific here, but anyway, she says, I started sweating. Apparently, she was getting my message. I wasn't intending it as such. I didn't have no clue that she could do that. I could do that, but she got it. A second experience
Too
was
bad you guys were connected. Why did you get a divorce?
real connected. Okay, so a second experience, I had an incoming message that I was feeling an urge to go to this person. It was a temporary relationship in the course of getting divorced. And I wasn't intending that. My wife and I gotten back together. And so anyway, that happened. All right, third time was the big one.
That happened. Okay.
Third time, I was playing with this. I had realized it worked. So I had a live-in girlfriend, been living with me for 10 years, roughly. And she was working. I sent her a message, donuts. Get some donuts, just for fun. She comes through the door 20 minutes later with donuts. I
Hey.
did this 10 to
Wow.
15 times. No more than twice did it not work.
Wow.
I
Wow.
realized what I did wrong. I said it twice, one of those two times. I said it four times, one of those two times. And three times worked every time.
Well, maybe we could work on something like world peace, 'cause those would be good
Yeah, I
ones.
need to work on that.
Thank you so much. I'm sure you hear stories about this all the time, Steve, where there's psychic phenomenon as I near death is becoming a huge. I Googled it the other day and I think hit 50 million or something like that in terms of Googling. It's very incredible that we're living in this time now where this psychic phenomenon is being researched and communicated about in such a scientific way.
Yeah, there's still some resistance to it from mainstream scientists, but
Yes.
there, like I said, as we said earlier, there is this kind of growing wave of interest and openness to these things. And I think there's a lot of evidence that we are on the verge of a kind of paradigm shift where the old materialistic model of reality falls away and this new, more holistic, almost more esoteric model of reality becomes normal.
Well, I interview a lot of the esoteric, I do, but you are entrenched in the world of the materialist scientist. And I am curious, have you ever seen anybody actually convert?
Well, yeah, there are quite a few stories actually. In fact, one of the problem of consciousness has been quite, significant in science over the past 20, 30 years. A lot of people have been researching the idea of where consciousness comes from, There's always been this assumption that the brain produces consciousness, that somehow the neurons of the brain or the networks of the brain work together to produce our conscious experience. And one of the original researchers, a guy called Christoph Koch, he eventually kind of converted to panpsychism because he realized that the effort to explain consciousness in terms of the brain was fruitless. You know, it was kind of a waste of time. You couldn't do it. So he eventually felt, you know, compelled to convert to a more, you know, esoteric vision of the world, which suggests that consciousness is everywhere. It's in matter all the time. And therefore, you don't need to explain how the brain produces consciousness. You need to explain how the brain, how consciousness kind of comes through the brain.
I've been toying with this philosophy lately about those loved ones who have crossed over. And if it is if that level of consciousness, once the physical being dies, but that consciousness continues on, if there is no time and no space, according to quantum physics, can that level of consciousness still linger, timeless and spaceless, and can it be held by those that remember them? So the more loved ones remember someone who's crossed over, does that memory hold their consciousness closer to this plane or those that remember them?
Wow, that's an interesting question. I'm not sure whether it's, you know, I'm not sure about the effect of memory, but maybe just the openness of believing that, you know, that contact is possible. And maybe just in some way thinking about that person draws them towards us. Certainly, you know, the question of life after death is such a controversial one. You know, in terms of science and academia, it's kind of like the big taboo.
Yes, yes.
I mean, I remember speaking to a colleague a while ago, and he said something dismissive about, you know, the idea, why do some people still believe in life after death? And I said, well, you know, actually, I'm open to the idea of some kind of life after death. And he looked at me like I was crazy. You know, he had this sort of startled look on his face. Because, you know, if you're an academic or a scientist, you're not supposed to believe in these things.
Right.
But I think, you know, the evidence for some form of life after death is pretty compelling if you're, you know, if you're open to it.
Especially if you're out there in the world of peer-reviewed journals, that is a little bit tougher topic. But if you think about it from quantum physics, like attracts like. So if you are having this experience of wanting to connect with a being. So I take Wayne Dyer for an example, and there's so many millions of people who loved his work and constantly reading his book still, and Hay House Radio still plays his, you know, podcasts and shows and so forth. Could that still be holding a collective consciousness that Wayne could have left as a residue after he crossed over? If there is no time and no space, could like attract like in a level of consciousness?
That's possible. Yeah, I mean, you know, the whole idea of time is it's kind of so mysterious. I think many physicists now accept that time is an illusion. I think, yeah, Einstein knew that. And, you know, there are a lot of quantum physicists who talk about how what we experience in the present is a result of waves that come from the future, waves that come from the past, and the kind of interaction of those waves creates our present experience. Mm-hmm. And there's all kind of findings in quantum physics that show that experiences or events can happen in reverse. It's called retrocausation. Mm-hmm. So even the traditional idea of cause and effect, you know, is kind of discarded in quantum physics. So in some sense, it does seem to be the case that everything, the whole of the future, the whole of the past exists now. You know, the past doesn't fade away. It's still here, and the future is already here. You know, it's in some sense has already happened. So everything kind of converges in the now, and the whole of time exists in this moment.
So why can't someone's consciousness do the same? If it exists outside the mind, and if it's outside the brain, and if it's exists in the quantum field and the field of oneness, why can't it continue on simultaneously?
Yeah, well, I think it does. I mean, I think the whole reason why time is eternal and the whole of time exists now is because that's an aspect of fundamental consciousness. That's a quality, this timeless quality is built into fundamental consciousness. And what we experience as time is created by our minds, it's created by our thoughts and by our egos.
So interesting, because my first 2-hour guest was just a spiritual teacher talking about timelessness and time warping and so forth. And now I'm speaking with the scientist and we're having the same conversation. So great. I love it. It's it's starting to blend. It's definitely,
well, that's a good sign. Yeah. It's a very good indication of what's happening.
But if it is truly the study of consciousness is fascinating, and we're starting to now embark upon scientists studying consciousness. And Evan talked to me about, you know, University of Virginia and Jim Tucker and all these great, brilliant people who are really doing all this great work about the existence of life after life. I think we're just on the precipice of something that is going to be the norm in about 50 years. Maybe we can shorten that.
Yeah, it is. You know, I'm pretty sure there is a paradigm shift underway. And I think some scientists are clinging more firmly to the materialist model because, you know, in parallel to what I was talking about before, they sense that it's under threat. Mm-hmm. And they're becoming a bit more dogmatic. You know, people like Richard Dawkins and Steven Pinker, they're becoming very dogmatic, just in the same way that fundamentalist religious people are. Mm-hmm. And yeah, but other scientists, maybe just outside the mainstream, are becoming more and more open and more and more aware of alternative perspectives, whether it's to explain evolution or to explain the influence of the mind over the body and the placebo effect and psychic phenomena and so on. So, yeah, I think I'm very optimistic about you know, the next few decades in science.
Is this third way evolution starting to be accepted?
I think it is. You know, they're, you know, they have a great website, if anybody wants to check it out, called the Third Way of Evolution. And there are so many kind of eminent biologists and eminent evolutionary theorists who have collected together to form this new approach. And they've published so many papers and so many books. And yeah, it's definitely becoming more influential. And I think there is an old guard of evolutionary theorists, people like Richard Dawkins, who are still kind of, you know, putting forward these kind of fairly outdated ideas. And yeah, I think, you know, it's definitely becoming more and more accepted. Partly as a result of there's so much more modern research that shows that, you know, how flexible life forms are and how creative evolution seems to be, in a way which is way beyond any random factors. So you see, you know, it's partly as we uncover more evidence, we're beginning to realize that the world is much more complex and much more kind of spiritual than people used to believe.
Well, I think actually people did used to believe it was very spiritual. And in ancient history, and there's evidence of that everywhere, hieroglyphics everywhere. It's just when science became the materialistic view really came into effect that started to get overshadowed and fade away. I think that's kind of
true.
What you're saying, right?
Yeah. Right. You know, a lot of the early scientists were also quite spiritual people, you know, like Einstein. Einstein, yeah.
Perfect.
Even, I mean, a lot of the original quantum physicists, like Niels Bohr, Heisenberg, they were also incredibly spiritual people. They read texts of Indian spiritual philosophy.
Right, exactly. All right, we're going to take another quick break, and we will be back with Steve Taylor and your questions. I'm Lisa Garr, you're listening to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast AM. I want to tell you that I also do several other shows per week. If you want to catch me, my schedule, you can see theawareshow.com. Just theawareshow.com. You can tell all the different shows that I'm on, Gaia TV and Hay House Radio and KPFK and WBAI, lots of different, basically syndicated myself. But it's all about the name of communicating messages that inspire positive growth and change. So check that out on there. And I will return as your host on Coast to Coast when we come back. Welcome back to Coast AM. I am Lisa Garr, and my guest is Steve Taylor. We're talking about his latest book called Spiritual Science. He also wrote The Leap and Great Waking from Sleep, The Fall. I'm sorry, The Fall, The Leap. It's basically the same thing. So I just gave you a new title to write about, Steve. So in your lectures at as a university lecturer, what do you inspire your students to write about?
Well, we teach them mainstream psychology. We also teach spiritual psychology. So, rather than just sort of feeding them information, we try to encourage them to use information to develop themselves. So we try to offer them ways of expanding their vision of the world, expanding their experience of their own selves. So we try to make it a very kind of experiential course, and we teach them sort of alternative perspectives so that, they don't necessarily have to accept the kind of the view of the world they're given by conventional society as reality.
Well, I'm sure that you've got all sorts of questions that have come your way. So we're going to go back to our callers here. We've got Joseph in San Diego that called in, west of the Rockies. Hi, Joseph. Thanks for calling. Oops, we're
Hi,
right there
Dan.
with
I
you.
would like to do a quick statement and then a question. And I hope they're both profound. As a little kid, I woke up, I was 5 years old. I went out in the living room. I seen a light. I said, what the hell am I doing here? What's life about? Then later on, a couple years later, I was involved in the Alaskan tsunami. I survived that. I came 2 streets from my house in Pacifica. Then later on, went to India and I studied the Vedic wisdom. So what I'm trying to understand is even Clapton said, because he's a Christian, everyone understands the truth, everyone knows the score. I finally found a way to live in the presence of the Lord. What I'm trying to explain is, doesn't the Vedas hold the key, the Vedic literature from India? And we're talking about Einstein a couple of times. You were mentioning Einstein. Well, he was trying to read all the different scriptures, including the Bhagavad Gita. And I don't know if he ever finished, but to bring peace to the world. And isn't truth right there in front of our faces, and the slaughtering of animals and abortion just leads to karmic rebalance by having wars so that we can, And now we're so close to having a big war because we're slaughtering billions of animals and living in a structural way that it's unsustainable,
Is your question, are we, and I'd love you to answer this, Steve, is it too late? Are
Yeah,
we?
I'm saying is like basically is it have we gone beyond the point of no return, like the band Kansas said.
Right.
Wow.
Okay. Go ahead. Good
Yeah,
question.
thanks, Joseph. Very interesting perspective. Well, I'm a great admirer of Vedic wisdom and Indian Vedanta philosophy. My favorite spiritual book is the Upanishads, the Indian Upanishads, and I love the Bhagavad Gita. And yeah, I think there is so much wisdom, and I think the view of the world which the Upanishads present, or the Bhagavad Gita, is essentially true. It's also my view of the world, the idea that the fundamental reality of the universe is spirit or Brahman, and human beings are also filled with Brahman. Our essential spirit is Atman, which is the manifestation of Brahman in us. And the essential goal of our lives is to become one with the universe, so that Atman unites with Brahman. So I think that's all very profound and very true. But it's not just in the Vedas, in Vedanta. It's practically every spiritual philosophy in the world presents the same ideas in a slightly different way, maybe slightly in a slightly different context or a slightly different perspective. But it's even in Chinese philosophy, the idea that the Tao is the essential reality, the essential kind of spirit of the universe, and our life's happiness comes from finding harmony with the Tao. The same ideas occur in a slightly different context. But I don't think it's too late. I think it's never too late, and I think there is a process of awakening underway. And no matter how much destruction there is in the world, how much cruelty and brutality there is in the world, and there is one heck of a lot of brutality and cruelty, it's never too late. There is a process of awakening underway, which can, potentially lead to a more harmonious future.
That's, I guess, why you wrote the book, right?
Yeah, exactly. So I'm trying
And
to
all of them.
contribute to that shift.
You are trying to contribute. You are contributing to that. shift. You're not trying. You actually
I'm not
are
trying.
breaking.
That's right.
All right. Thank you for your call. John in Long Beach. John, our wild card line three. Do you have a question for Steve Taylor?
Yeah, well, you know, you're talking about dogma and, you know, esoteric. We say esoteric here, not esoteric. But anyway, esoteric. Real quick. This is just a little funny. Have you ever seen the bumper sticker where somebody's car says, "Your karma ran over my dogma"?
Mm-hmm.
You ever heard?
Mm-hmm.
I just think it's funny. Anyway, I wanted to ask this question. Do you believe that we can go into the future and look and peek into the future? And if we can do that, if you believe we can do that, I've had a long philosophical discussion about this with people, certain people. If you can look into the future and actually glimpse the future, I think that indicates we don't have free will, that the future's already written.
Mm.
You know, I just wonder what you guys think about that. I mean, if there's part of your, say, dogma or whatever, karma.
Well, it does seem to be a logical conclusion. But in reality, and I think other people have pointed out the same perspective, in reality, there does seem to be a degree of change. You know, for example, I've had kind of precognitive experiences, which were not quite right. They were basically essentially correct, but there were slight variations, slight differences. And I think, you know, although the kind of general pattern of the future seems to, you know, already be in existence, there seems to be some potential for variation as well. You know, some potential element where we can express free will. So I don't think it's a simple matter of proving that free will doesn't exist. I think it's maybe more. Yeah, more nuanced than that.
I mean, it's a great and endless conversation. I mean, you could take, if you could predict the future and it doesn't go that way, did free will insert itself? Or if you really wanted something to happen in your future and it didn't happen, how do you explain that? I mean, there's so many different unseen forces.
I think there's a general pattern which manifests itself, but not in a completely specific or clear way. I think there's some room for the change in the manifestation process. Differences or variations can sometimes occur.
However, I've always said there's a reason for everything. When you look back, you see this happened the way that it should have happened, and it resulted in the exact way that it should have happened. Did you ever notice that?
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's true as well. I think it's a question of a general pattern which unfolds itself. But I don't think it always unfolds itself in a very exact way. I think there's some room for variation.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, how can we take this information and impact on a more global level, things like poverty and hunger and human trafficking and environmental devastation and so forth?
Well, again, as we mentioned earlier, I think fundamentally it's about connection, and that as we transcend a sense of separateness, as we begin to wake up to a more expansive reality, a kind of more complete vision of the world, then we realize that we are not separate, we are interconnected. And it's also a question of experiencing that connection. You know, we experience it through empathy, through the desire to be altruistic. And the more open we become, the more responsibility we feel for the world as a whole and for other people's well-being.
Mm-hmm.
We transcend the bubble of selfishness, which imprisons us in our own desires and needs. And we open up, we expand, and we feel this desire to contribute to the world. And we feel connected to nature, just as indigenous peoples felt connected to nature. We feel that same sense of empathy towards the natural mm-hmm. world. And then we feel a responsibility to try to protect the natural world and to heal the natural world.
Mm-hmm.
So again, I think it's a process of awakening where, you know, we feel this desire to heal the world, to make the world a better place.
Yes. And if there's a way that we can actually influence the world with our mind through consciousness, that's what we can do about it. Mostly you can talk about this, but if you can actually put your actions behind your words, it really, I think, makes a big difference. You know of Lynn McTaggart and her intention experiments
mm-hmm.
and how well those have been studied. And she also has, you know, dealt with the scientific community, and she keeps showing up and keeps, you know, dealing with the various intention experiments, and it's wonderful.
Yeah, it's another sign that, you know, there are so many researchers around the world contributing to this new vision of reality and helping us to move beyond the materialistic perspective.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. In your experience, do you have a personal experience with consciousness or connection?
For me, it happens a lot, you know, yeah, I'd say every day at certain moments of the day where I experience an expansiveness of consciousness. And
do you have
a
study?
Sorry?
Do you have a specific study or a practice that you do?
Well, I meditate, so that probably helps. Mm-hmm. But for me, I spend a lot of time in nature. And for me, nature has a meditative effect. And you know, I can look at the sky, for example. I can go to a local park, and maybe I'm playing soccer with my kids in the park. And I suddenly look at the sky and think, wow, it looks so incredibly real. And there's some sort of spiritual force which seems to pervade the sky and pervade the sunshine, and which seems to connect everything together. There's some sort of spiritual force which seems to pervade the surroundings and somehow give rise to the surroundings. And it happens a lot usually when I'm in a fairly relaxed state of mind, not when I'm driving my car, mm-hmm. traffic jam.
Right, but, right.
Usually if I'm a fairly relaxed and still frame of mind, it happens a lot.
It must be interesting because there's no real conclusion here, where in a materialistic approach, it would be black or white, and here's the science and here's the statistics around it. But with this conversation of consciousness and expansion, it seems to go on forever, and it's almost like, well, it is quantum physics. You could continue on forever and ever with it.
Yeah, there is no limit.
And
that's great. You know, it's I think some scientists, they like to believe that the world is, that our understanding of the world is complete and everything is kind of categorized and boxed away. And I think there's a sense of control or power which comes with that. You know, we understand the world, and in a sense that kind of understanding is also overstanding, you know, because there's a sense that you are in control and you are superior to the world. But in reality, you know, there is no complete understanding. It's just there are so many mysteries, there are so many magical phenomena which don't appear to make sense, you know, in terms of our normal understanding. It just goes on forever. And I love that. I love the fact that there is no limit. It just goes on forever and ever. And just like, you know, life itself goes on forever and ever. The universe itself goes mm-hmm. on forever and ever.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And to deny that is to deny life itself. I mean, the existence of wonder itself. If you look at it psychologically, though, the idea of having something so concrete and black and white would keep you safe from being affected emotionally from the world.
I think that's the that's the source of it, really, a
bottom
desire
line.
For security mm-hmm. and protection.
But this way, looking and expanding through human consciousness, how can that be safe?
Well, it's a different kind of safety. Again, it's related to separation. You know, it's like I remember when I was a young man, maybe 25 years ago, I was kind of quite confused and not very happy. And whenever I went to natural surroundings, kind of expansive natural surroundings like mountains, or when I went to the ocean, I felt a sense of threat in some way. It was almost as if they could overwhelm me because the enormity of it was so vast.
Mm.
But now, now that I'm more stable and integrated and more developed, I don't feel that kind of sense of potentially being overwhelmed. I feel a sense of connection. A sense of being mountains or being part of the ocean. And that's a different kind of safety, you know. It's the safety of, you know, feeling at one and feeling at home, the safety of knowing that you are not a fragment. I mean, if you're a fragment, you need to protect yourself and defend yourself. But if you are part of your surroundings and part of the universe, you are already safe, so there's no desire to protect yourself.
I was wondering why I had this experience today, but it's for this moment. I went on a mountain bike ride today in the middle of the afternoon because that's the only time I had to go. It was 109 degrees out.
Wow.
And I stopped halfway through the ride under a tree because there was shade and there was a hot breeze. And I just needed to just stop. But when I stopped, I looked at this beautiful oak tree and I looked at the texture of the tree trunk and the beautiful leaves and then the breeze that was coming up. And it was just, I just stayed there. I just needed that moment. I just recognized the beauty in that moment. And the rest of the ride was peaceful. It
Yeah, wonderful. Yeah,
was a great ride. Yeah. It was
those
a good
experiences of
moment.
presence are wonderful.
Yeah. It was a present moment. And it's so expansive and it's so simple. It's so simple in that moment to have that level of. And it's impossible to think that that's all that is. There was just a tree and bark and a hot breeze. It was the expansion beyond that tree and the breeze and where it came from. And just, 20 miles away, it's 40 degrees cooler. Could that
Wow.
have come my way a little? That would have been really nice. Next time I'll
Yeah.
summons that.
Yeah. Those moments are so kind of nourishing and, so awesome.
Yeah, that's a snapshot in my mind that I don't need a cell phone to take.
Yeah.
That won't go away anytime soon.
Yeah.
Well, it's been a pleasure to speak with you, and you have a lot of wonderful books that you have written. Steve Taylor has been my guest, and this latest book here is Spiritual Science: Why Science Needs Spirituality. I love that. I didn't mention this, but you were in Watkins' list of the 100 most spiritually influential living people, which is really wonderful. Other books include The Fall and The Leap and Back to Sanity, all sorts of great things. Well, are you still teaching?
I am, yeah. We're just about to start the new semester at my university.
Great.
So in a couple of weeks, I'll be teaching again at the university.
Great. Well, have fun with that and enjoy the moments in life. It's been really great
Yeah,
speaking
you
with
too.
you.
Thanks, Lisa. That was great.
All right, thank you so much. And I want to say thank you also to all the wonderful people that make Coast to Coast happen, Lisa Lyon and George Norrie, the wonderful George Norrie, Tommy Danhiser, Gina Salvati, Stephanie Smith and Chris Boros, and Nathan, the wonderful engineer here in studio with me. And you, thank you so much for listening and being a part of the show and staying up with me. And I am Lisa Carr, and until next time, I invite you to stay aware.